I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jamie Gerdson. Jamie is the president and CEO of Apollo Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. And Jamie, you're also an author. But before we start talking about the subject of the day, which is your new book called Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Business, I want to congratulate you and all of the employees at Apollo for just winning, just very recently, the Gehring Center Family Business of the Year. That is wonderful.
Thank you very much. You know, it's the employees that make it happen. I was unfortunately the only one there to accept it on behalf of the company, but we are incredibly fortunate to have such a wonderful team behind us to make those things happen.
And your book is really about leadership and motivating teams and taking a business from where it is today into future success and growth. How did you decide to write the book?
The book is a collaboration of 10 years of experience. When I started back at Apollo in 2002, one of the things that we had to really look at was I was a very traditional business. It was a small, family-owned company doing what most traditional businesses do. How do we go from 1 month to the next month? And I had come from a very non-traditional background, which was a technology startup. So I took some of what I had learned there and infused it into Apollo and really sort of went on this long journey about how to innovate a traditional business.
Well, what's the significance of the book title, Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbred?
I've been asked that a lot. So
I'll bet.
it's a different title than most people would think about just a traditional business book. First thing you have to understand is that traditional business is defined as typically companies of 100 employees or less that are in a traditional business, such as professional services, plumbing, heating and air, auto dealers, services and businesses that have been around a long time, even manufacturers. Squirrels is interesting. I heard a story one time about if you want to climb a tree, what do you want? You want a dog or a squirrel? And when you look around, most companies have more dogs than they have squirrels, and they tend to not go from one level to another as a result. The thoroughbreds, or the boat portion, is interesting. I rode competitively for a long time and went to college on a scholarship for it. And in rowing or crew, the fastest boats always were the ones that were in sync. And so there's some commonality among that in the book. And then thoroughbreds, you know, everybody thinks to have a winning team, you need the best and the brightest. And my inclination is, yes, you need some of those, but too many chiefs don't make a tribe.
Let's talk about leadership in medium-sized businesses and why you think it's often overlooked in that business size space.
If you look at where all the interest in today's media as well as capital, it's either in the startup phase or it's in the Fortune 2000 space. But yet what everybody fails to realize is 96% of all businesses in the U.S. are $1 million or less in revenue. And that actually are the true job creators in the U.S. Startups in general, while we fund them and we get great innovation, we don't necessarily get consistent job growth from that space. Fortune 2000's problem is those companies are so large, typically they look to shed jobs through innovation. My sort of philosophy is that if you take the middle ground, which is most of the employment today, if we focus on improving leadership, whether it's through coaching, whether it's through mentorship, whether it's through taking what they do and helping them understand they need to make a leap of faith from traditional to sort of what we call conventional, they have this sort of really conventional type thinking, to what we call sound thinking, the reality is they'll create more jobs, increase not only their employment, but also increase their communities.
We've been talking to Jamie Gerdson. Jamie is the CEO and president of Apollo Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing, but he's also an author of a book called Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Businesses. Jamie, if folks listening today would like to pick up the book, where can they find it?
They can find it on Amazon. They can find it Barnes & Noble.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jamie Gerdson. Jamie is the president of Apollo Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing. And Jamie's also the author of a new business book, Squirrels, Boats, and Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Businesses. And Jamie, I can't imagine a much more traditional business than a heating, cooling, and plumbing company in Cincinnati, Ohio. But you actually have changed and innovated quite a bit in that business in the 10 years you've been there. And in your book, you describe some of the things that I assume you learned during that process. What is the push-pull theory? That sounds really interesting to me.
It's interesting. That theory sort of came out of rowing, but you know, the idea is that when I first joined Apollo, I really thought I could just push everybody and I could push everybody to that next level. And that works when you have about 25 employees because you know everybody, you know what drives them, you know what motivates them. The challenge is that as you start to grow and your employee base grows, you can't do it anymore. You don't have enough time in the day. And so you have to develop an empowerment model that allows your employees to actually pull you. It really is a leap of faith to go from a push to a pull. Most entrepreneurs are very happy. Like, let's say I'm going to have a daily huddle every 5 minutes. I'm going to tell everybody what to do, and they go do it. What happens when you have 75 people that are in leadership roles, and quite frankly, you can't push them because honestly, you just can't do it. I think one of the things that we have to think long and hard about all the time as leaders in small businesses is how do we make the leap of faith from a pushing environment to a pulling environment?
Well, and that's hard, Jamie, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's their business. They keep it very close to their vest. It's very difficult in many situations for business owners in the size of companies you're talking about to delegate that responsibility.
And I think that goes back to the belief that you're the only one who can do your job. And I think when an owner can finally realize that they are the first person that should be fired, that's probably a good first step. And that seems a little brash, but I think at the end of the day, everybody thinks that nobody can do it better than them. And I'd tell you, last I checked, there are 9 billion people on the planet. I'm pretty sure there's probably somebody absolutely better than at something I do all the time. So I think you got to be sort of humble about that and realize that your people really do want to lead.
Well, and if you think about it, they're the ones down on the ground. They're the ones dealing with the clients and the customers. They're the ones that if you just ask their opinion on many things, that they could give you some very good advice on how to put improvements in place and things like that. So I think you're right on. Let's talk about another aspect that I'm just really interested in. And this whole discussion of squirrels, boats, thoroughbreds. I know you talk about some dogs in your book. You're relating these to types of employees, types of people within organizations. Maybe you can describe the significance of that.
You know, I had a black and a chocolate lab, and I loved those dogs very much, but the last I checked, they were never going to climb the tree in the backyard. And sometimes in business, we ask employees to do things that they are incapable of doing, and we wonder why the result is always the same. Why is it not different? And I think when I look at squirrels, if you want to climb a tree, I'm going to pick a squirrel over a dog all the time. The idea about thoroughbreds, you know, it's really interesting. I think in sports teams, it's interesting when they go ahead and they go out in free agency and they get all these great athletes, but they never play well together. And so I think you have to look at your organization in the same way. I want horses that run fast. I want squirrels to climb trees. But, you know, you got to have a mix of different people all the time. And the boats portion is that when everybody in the boat is rowing the same way in the direction, it's actually easier and you go much faster and it's much more quiet.
The key is they have to know which direction to go.
Correct. Very much so.
Again, the book's called Squirrels, Boats, Thoroughbreds, Lessons for Leading Change in Traditional Businesses. And Jamie, you're about to have a book signing coming up. Where else can folks find the book?
You can find it on Amazon. You can do digital or you can buy soft or hardcover. It's also available on fishermansfoundation.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, we recently wrote a column in response to a question about IRA rules, and I think they're very confusing for everyone because there's so many different types of IRAs and different rules depending on the type of IRA that you have. But there are some pretty standard things with IRAs. For example, the amount of money that you can contribute to an IRA. It's standard across the lines of the IRAs, but it changes from time to time because it's adjusted for inflation. And in 2013, you can contribute $5,500 to your IRA as long as you have earned income in that amount or your spouse does. If you're over 50, you get a bonus.
That's one of the few bonuses for being over 50, but yes, you get a bonus. You can actually contribute $6,500
right
to your IRA if you're age 50 or older.
There are various types of IRAs. If you're not covered by any qualified plan, you can just do a traditional IRA, which is a deductible IRA, and you get a tax deduction on the front page of your tax return, so you don't have to itemize to do it.
But there are limitations if you are covered by a qualified retirement plan. So if you participate, for example, in your 401k plan at work, depending on your income level, you may be limited on the deductibility of an IRA contribution. You can still make a contribution to an IRA, but it's non-deductible.
And a non-deductible IRA is in contrast to a Roth IRA. Although you don't get a deduction when you put money in a Roth IRA, the benefit of a Roth IRA is when the money comes out of the Roth, as long as it's a qualifying distribution, it's tax-free, including all the earnings that you make while the money's in the Roth.
The rules can be very cumbersome and confusing, but certainly they're worth looking into because these types of investment accounts, these retirement plans, can really add up. If you think about the fact that, for example, in a Roth IRA, if you start contributing just a few thousand dollars every year, year after year, by the time you're ready to retire, because of the compounding effect, it's the magic of compounding, it can be worth thousands and thousands of dollars. So it's clearly something you need to investigate. Now, there is limitations, again, on the Roth IRA contributions in terms of who can participate. If you're a high earner, you are not eligible to directly contribute to a Roth IRA. And the reason I say directly contribute, there is a backdoor approach to getting what would be non-deductible contributions to an IRA to a Roth.
Yeah, the backdoor is if you make too much money to contribute to a Roth, you make a contribution to a non-deductible IRA, and then the next year convert that IRA to a Roth IRA.
Yes, and interestingly, it's because there are no limitations, no income limitations, as to who can make a conversion from a non-deductible IRA to a Roth. So it's kind of a back way to get the Roth IRA. There are a couple of issues, though, you have to be aware of, and it may not always make sense depending on whether or not you have other IRAs that are traditional IRAs.
Because you may not have bases or enough bases in the non-deductible IRA if you have other IRAs and you've had buildup of earnings in the IRA.
But if the earnings are low, it may make sense to make that conversion because from that point forward, all of the income grows tax-free, assuming you take qualifying distributions. It's just something that you should look at, consult with a professional who understands these things because you don't want to make a mistake. It could be very costly from a tax point of view, but it could also be very beneficial. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, we recently wrote a column in response to a question about IRA rules, and I think they're very confusing for everyone because there's so many different types of IRAs and different rules depending on the type of IRA that you have. But there are some pretty standard things with IRAs. For example, the amount of money that you can contribute to an IRA. It's standard across the lines of the IRAs, but it changes from time to time because it's adjusted for inflation. And in 2013, you can contribute $5,500 to your IRA as long as you have earned income in that amount or your spouse does. If you're over 50, you get a bonus.
That's one of the few bonuses for being over 50, but yes, you get a bonus. You can actually contribute $6,500
right,
to your IRA if you're age 50 or older.
There are various types of IRAs. If you're not covered by any qualified plan, you can just do a traditional IRA, which is a deductible IRA, and you get a tax deduction on the front page of your tax return, so you don't have to itemize to do it.
But there are limitations if you are covered by a qualified retirement plan. So if you participate, for example, in your 401k plan at work, depending on your income level, you may be limited on the deductibility of an IRA contribution. You can still make a contribution to an IRA, but it's non-deductible.
And a non-deductible IRA is in contrast to a Roth IRA, although you don't get a deduction when you put money in a Roth IRA. The benefit of a Roth IRA is when the money comes out of the Roth, as long as it's a qualifying distribution, it's tax-free, including all the earnings that you make while the money's in the Roth.
The rules can be very cumbersome and confusing, but certainly they're worth looking into because these types of investment accounts, these retirement plans, can really add up. If you think about the fact that, for example, in a Roth IRA, if you start contributing just a few thousand dollars every year, year after year, by the time you're ready to retire, because of the compounding effect, it's the magic of compounding, it can be worth thousands and thousands of dollars. So it's clearly something you need to investigate. Now, there is limitations, again, on the Roth IRA contributions in terms of who can participate. If you're a high earner, you are not eligible
to directly contribute to a Roth IRA. And the reason I say directly contribute, there is a backdoor approach to getting what would be non-deductible contributions to an IRA to a Roth.
Yeah, the backdoor is if you make too much money to contribute to a Roth, you make a contribution to a non-deductible IRA, and then the next year convert that IRA to a Roth IRA.
Yes, and interestingly, it's because there are no limitations, no income limitations, as to who can make a conversion from a non-deductible IRA to a Roth. So it's kind of a back way to get the Roth IRA. There are a couple of issues, though, you have to be aware of, and it may not always make sense depending on whether or not you have other IRAs that are traditional IRAs.
Because you may not have bases or enough bases in the non-deductible IRA if you have other IRAs and you've had buildup of earnings in the IRA.
But if the earnings are low, it may make sense to make that conversion because from that point forward, all of the income grows tax-free, assuming you take qualifying distributions. It's just something that you should look at, consult with a professional who understands these things, because you don't want to make a mistake. It could be very costly from a tax point of view, but it could also be very beneficial. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mark Horwitz. Mark is a registered representative and investment advisor with AXA Advisors. You also call yourself a personal CFO. And what's that mean?
Most of my clients are very busy with their home life, their business life, their charitable works, and they don't have time to manage their affairs, both business, investments, and everything else. And I do that for them.
So just like a lot of our business clients, especially the larger ones, have CFOs, chief financial officer, that tends to take care of the more sophisticated financial aspects of the business. So as a personal CFO, you're taking care of the financial aspects, the investment aspects of someone's personal life?
I take care of their investments, their insurance, estate planning. But a lot of them are so busy, they don't have time to, like, if they want to sell their house, who's the realtor? If they want to get a mortgage, if they need a CPA, if they need insurance, who do they use?
So as a trusted advisor, you're able to help them find solutions to whatever their financial needs are.
That's true.
And so where do you find these folks?
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because almost everybody needs that. What I found out is a lot of people who do what I do don't ask the right questions, and they don't listen. I ask questions, and then I shut up, and I listen, and people, they don't tell me they need something, but they say, you know, my daughter had a baby, or we're thinking of selling the house, or whatever, and if I pick up on it, I can refer them to great people that I have a network with. I get to the point when people need something, they call me, and they say, do you know somebody who can? And of course I do. And I will either set them up with a face-to-face meeting, or I'll give them a phone number, and then I'll tell the person who I referred them to that they should call them. And so often it cuts through the red tape, and it gives them somebody who knows what they need right away.
People don't have time to go out and do their own due diligence, their own research, when something that important, and when they can effectively get a referral from someone they already trust to help them minimize that time and actually get the result, a solution to their problem, that's a very powerful and a value added.
You know, Crystal, I have so many clients that are very smart. You know, CFOs of their own company or CEOs. I mean, they are really smart, but they don't want to do this.
Well, if folks listening today would like to learn more about you, Mark, learn more about that type of service, or just have any questions about estate planning, about investments, about any other financial aspect, how can they reach you?
Phone number 513-762-7738, or my email is Mark, M-A-R-C, at Mark Horwitz, MarkHorwitz.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mark Horwitz. Mark is a registered representative and investment advisor representative of AXA Advisors, and you call yourself a personal CFO. You interact with a lot of individuals for their investments, insurance needs, and really pretty much all their financial needs. What are some of the mistakes that you find that people make?
That's weird, because so many people will come to me and they'll show me all their assets, the stuff they would like me to manage, but then they show me their 401k and let's say their wife's or spouse's 403b or other retirement plan, and they think they're diversified. But when you put it into Morningstar and you run the whole scenario, they don't have any diversification. There are a lot of different mutual funds and companies out there that have duplications within each company. And sometimes people, because they have different company products, they think they're diversified, when in fact they're not. They can be all in the same basket.
Do people make decisions intelligently, or do they sometimes do things rashly as a result of reading a newspaper or whatever?
A lot of people listen to what's going on in Washington, and they're afraid. You know, we call it the sleep factor. If you can't stand it, then a lot of times people get out, and they get out at the wrong time. A lot of times they'll get out at the bottom and they'll stay out as the market comes back.
I think a lot of times people who aren't financially savvy, they are really good at whatever they do, but not necessarily on the finance side, they have the best of intentions. They might go to their attorney. They might have a trust drawn up. They think they're in good shape. But guess what? They didn't transfer the assets over the trust. And it just seems to me having someone take a look at the whole picture, making sure that what they think is in line with their goals is in fact handled properly.
As you know, I don't do taxes, I don't do wills, I don't do trusts, but I ask people to bring everything in so I can see it to try to make sure everything's been done. I have seen the most beautiful 300 or 400 page trust that someone paid, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 for, and the attorney didn't go that last step to move stuff into the name of the trust, whether it be their house or their investments or their checking account, which means it's like building a house with the best security system. You leave all the furniture in the front yard. And I've seen people where there's a spouse passes away or they change a job, they leave a 401k, or sometimes if there's a death or a divorce, they forget to change the beneficiary on their life insurance or their 401k.
Mark, if someone listening would like more information, learn more about AXA, what's your contact information?
Phone number 513-762-7738, or email is Mark, M-A-R-C, at Mark Horwitz, MarkHorwitz.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Ted Torbeck. Ted's the president and CEO of Cincinnati Bell, and he's a member of the United Way Board of Directors, and also Chris Martin, who is the vice president of development for United Way here in Greater Cincinnati. And gentlemen, the United Way campaign, the annual campaign, is now about 8 weeks into it, and you've got another big financial goal, don't you?
Yes, this year's goal is $62,850,000, and to date we've raised roughly 62% of that.
That's wonderful. And Ted, you're an active member in this organization.
Yes, I am. I'm on the board. I'm also working on new business development to bring into the campaign.
You know, a lot of people seem to be engaged in United Way. It's one of the larger United Way organizations in terms of fundraising in the country, isn't it?
Well, it's the sixth largest in the country, so that's a pretty incredible number. But we're also the number one in the world in Tocqueville membership, which is the highest level of giving in the leadership level.
Why is that, Chris?
The two factors in my eyes are the culture of giving in this community is among the best in the entire country. I think people truly care about helping one another in Greater Cincinnati, and I think this is just one indicator of that. And then I would also say the commitment to the work that's being done in the areas of education, income, and health.
Speaking of education, income, and health, are those the bold goals that United Way has? Because yeah. I know it's able to focus its efforts.
There's three major goals. One is on around education. It's that at least 85% of the children will be prepared for kindergarten. And then around employment or income, it's at least 90% of the labor force will be gainfully employed. And then the third is around health. It's at least 95% of the community will report having a usual place to go for medical care.
So how will you know when you've achieved those goals, or how do you know if you're on track?
Well, a few ways. One, there are underlying metrics that that we're measuring on a constant basis, you know, each and every year, and really looking to make progress right up through 2020. So working in conjunction with partners, working in conjunction with corporations and providers throughout the community, it's really about measuring the progress that we're making and adjusting our strategies to make sure that we can continue to make progress and really put us on the track that's needed in order to get to achieve the bold goals.
So as a contributor to the United Way campaign, I have the confidence of knowing that those dollars are really being used in a prioritized manner to really help our community and people here that really need our help.
When the United Way team developed the bold goals, they actually eliminated some of the agencies that they were servicing because they either didn't fit into the bold goal or they weren't achieving the numbers that they were asked to.
What is just fascinating to me is the way that United Way has really engaged top-level executives in this community and also small business people as well.
We make it fun. There's a great need in the community, and being able to help that need is huge. But also we can make it have fun. We have picnics, we have softball games, we have a lot of things that really bring your workforce together for a common cause.
Well, I just want to thank you both for what you're doing and really applaud your efforts. And if folks listening today would like to learn more about the United Way, would like to get involved in the United Way, contribute to the campaign, how can they find that information?
They can do one of two things. They can call our office at 513-762-7100 or visit us on the website at www.uwgc.org.
I am Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Ted Torbeck. Ted is the president and CEO of Cincinnati Bell, and he's here today really as a member of the United Way Board of Directors. And we're also joined by Chris Martin, who's vice president of development for United Way of Greater Cincinnati. And gentlemen, the United Way annual campaign is well underway. I know you've reached over 60% of your goal, but it seems that you're able to reach these goals because you have a lot of people that actually contribute to these campaigns, don't you, Chris?
Yes, absolutely. We have over 100,000 donors in the annual campaign each year, one of the largest campaigns in the entire country. It's really a reflection of the commitment that exists in this community for people to help one another.
Well, and I think it's also a reflection of the confidence they have when they make a contribution that the United Way organization is a good steward of their money. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about how organizations get funded by United Way.
It's a very strong process. You know, they got to fill out paperwork that basically says what they're going to accomplish as far as goals and targets. I got to say this, about 90 cents of every dollar goes directly to the need or the agency. I'd love to have my company running that efficient.
If I make a $100 contribution, 90 of those dollars will go to an underlying nonprofit organization.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I think is very important is that the United Way is a stickler on performance. Not only do you have lofty goals, each agency has lofty goals, they're measured on how they achieve those goals. It's based on results.
I would also add, if you really think about the funding mechanism and the way we go about choosing the partners that we make investments in the community, and really looking in three specific areas. It's making sure, one, that they have an impact. So are they having an impact on the people that they serve and on the community that we live in? Two is, are they aligned to achieve the bold goals that have been established for our region? And then lastly, are they accountable for providing measurements along the way? Are they accountable for the investment that our volunteers have chosen to make in that organization and accountable to get the results that we all should expect when we make a contribution?
Well, how did you choose the bold goals for the United Way campaign?
It was work that was done by roughly 4 or 5 dozen different partners from throughout the community, and it really was answering that question of what do we want Greater Cincinnati to look like by 2020. And so all came together and looked at a lot of different metrics and really came to agreement on what those bold goals should be.
And what are they, Chris?
There are 6 different bold goals. Just a few examples, having 85% of our kids prepared for kindergarten, having 90% of our population being gainfully employed and having 70% of our population reporting having excellent or good health.
Being the CEO of one of the major corporations here in our region, Ted, I would assume those goals line up with what you think we need as a community to be competitive?
Absolutely. Income, education, and health. There's not really three more important things for our community, and I think it really aligns well with the agencies that are supported by this campaign. What's important to know is that every dime counts. So it doesn't matter, you know, how much money you make. It's, you know, $5, $10, $15, anything that you can give is greatly appreciated, and it adds up. 100% participation in our company is what we try to strive for.
That's wonderful. And Chris, when's the campaign run through?
October 30th is our campaign finale date.
If someone listening today wants to learn more, they can go to your website, they can call you.
Yes, they could call us at 513-762-7100 or the website at www.uwgc.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, what a difference a year makes. Last year this time, we were all scratching our heads wondering what the tax law, if any, that was to be passed, how that would impact our clients and taxpayers. And certainly it made planning a little challenging.
It did, especially since the law that was actually passed was passed this year, January 1st, 2013 to be exact, that affected a lot of things that took place in 2012. And I think it's nice this year that at least we have a pretty clear vision that nothing will happen between now and the end of the year legislatively, or it's highly unlikely that anything will happen. And most of the provisions were extended for 2 years or longer, so we really know what the landscape is for the rest of this year.
Yeah, I get a kick out of some of the terminology, though, when they talk about these permanent tax law changes, and I always say, yeah, it's permanent until the next Congress changes their mind, right? But for this year, like you said, it is still nice knowing as we head into December 31st what the tax laws that are affecting taxpayers are, so we can help them plan and save taxes, because you know what? Tax rates are going up again in the future.
The nominal rate may go down, but taxes themselves will probably go up. You know, one of the big things this year that was changed on January 1st is the ability to have bonus depreciation, which is a 50% expense of most qualifying personal property and equipment and a lot of other things. That expires at the end of this year, so this is probably the last year you'll be able to take the bonus depreciation. We also have the very large Section 179 deduction, which applies not just to new property, but also used property. And again, that is slated to go from $500,000 this year to $25,000 next year. Now, a lot of people think that 25 will be raised, but it's highly unlikely that it'll be as high as 500,000.
It seems to me, if you know that you're going to be in need of furniture, fixtures, equipment, certain leasehold improvements, you really may want to go ahead and get those items into service this year, because we do know for sure this year that those tax breaks exist. We don't know what it's going to look like next year.
Another thing that's expiring or scheduled to expire, subject to change in the future, are research credits. And there's a lot of companies that we've found that qualify for these research and development credits. You don't really have to have laboratory type research to qualify for this credit. And it can be a big benefit to companies, especially a lot of companies in the manufacturing space.
Or software development as well, or companies who are improving processes. It really comes down to whether or not you're testing certain processes in terms of trying something new and see if it works. And if that doesn't work, then revising that process, trying something different. Those types of expenses, even if you subcontract some of those processes out or some of the work out, can qualify. And I'm telling you, as you mentioned, we've seen big credits for those kinds of activities. You want to take a look at that to see if you can qualify.
You know, there's another provision in the tax law that's scheduled to expire at the end of this year, and that's the ability to make an IRA contribution or to make a charitable contribution from your IRA, to make it directly from your IRA. And what that does, it enables you to avoid taking it into income. And a lot of people, particularly older people who are required to make minimum distributions, like to take advantage of that technique if they have excess funds.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, the holidays are right around the corner, and you know me, I don't have the holiday music quite playing yet in my car, but I will soon because I love the holidays. One of the things, though, that come along with the holidays for many people, unfortunately, is additional credit card debt.
Well, that's because they probably haven't planned for their holiday spending. They may not even plan for it until January when they get their bills.
So in other words, people just buy on
impulse.
Impulse, exactly. As opposed to really taking the time, making a list, sticking to the list, and that really causes them trouble when they get their credit card bills in January.
Most people have to think of that word that nobody likes to use, and let me go ahead and say it, budget. But if you have a budget for the amount you're going to spend, and that's reasonable, you're more likely not to end up with substantial bills that you can't pay in January.
Another point, I think, is people buy, as you mentioned earlier, things on impulse and forget in some cases that they've already made the purchase for one of the individuals. So having that shopping list is certainly a tool. So the key is just plan for your shopping. Don't get yourself in debt. You know, the holidays really aren't about how much of an expense that you can acquire in terms of a gift item for a person. Unfortunately, this is the time of the year that people do find themselves in financial trouble because of the holidays. And just take the time, make a list, check it twice, don't go over your budget, keep credit cards to a minimum, and the holidays will be a lot happier.
And speaking of keeping credit cards to a minimum, that includes not just the amount of debt on your credit card, but really the amount of credit cards that you have, because it can affect your credit score. When you go to these department stores or retail chains and they give you an incentive to take out a new credit card, that may save you money instantly on your purchase, but it may cost you more in the long run because every additional credit application you get dings you on your credit score.
Clearly, that is not a good idea to open up those in-store credit cards because it really does hurt your credit score.
And if you do buy things on credit, which we don't advise, but if you do, try to make sure that you're charging it on a card that has a low rate of interest. Make sure you understand which cards charge which rates of interest and use them properly.
If you do find that you've gotten yourself into a jam with credit cards and a lot of credit card debt, you may want to do something as simple as calling the credit card company and seeing if they would be willing to reduce your interest rate. Sometimes if you just call and ask very politely, they will be able to reduce your credit card rate. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.